ETC is go.
Pegasus is go.
ETC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right-side patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people.
On RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's Friday night. Yep, the 21st of January, and welcome to it, folks. Welcome to the show. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you?
I'm good. I'm a little rough around the edges today, but well, you know, it's just been a busy week, and I've had a lot of different things going on. I had a meeting I had to attend in town yesterday, and it was a good meeting. Nothing, no great shakes, no big deal. On the whole wind turbine situation that we're fighting against out here, but I get home from those things, and I'm always just kind of wound up.
It happens.
It's just one of those things. And then I had a lot of different things just kind of going on. Nothing major, just piddly little things that were keeping me occupied all day. What about you?
Today was just kind of a down day. We had terrible rains here last night. It kept me up all night. So I had to just fight to stay awake, because you know how we are, Craig. Mm. If we fall asleep even for 20 minutes during the day, that's it for the night.
Yeah, we're kind of done.
Yeah.
You know, at that point. And I've been that way since I was a kid. You have too. And that's just our life. Welcome to it, right?
Yes. Nothing we can do about it.
You know, today got off to a very interesting start. First thing I see when I get up early this morning is that Meatloaf had passed away.
Yeah, I saw that super early in the morning. I was one of the first to post about it.
Right.
At like 4 or 5 in the morning or something like that. And all I know is he was great. He and Freddie Mercury sort of represented a whole different genre of rock music, sort of like they called it rock opera.
Right.
And it was just great. Their voices, I don't think there's a singer today in rock that can rival either one of their voices, except David, I believe his last name is Draymond, the one who does Sounds of Silence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but he also is a very different kind of singer. And, you know, that sound that he creates on the Sound of Silence that he did with the group Disturbed is very different from his normal singing voice, too. So
I know, but the fact that he can do that, to me, it's amazing. He's got a really good voice. I don't think it's as good as Mercury or Meatloaf, but I think it's still pretty good.
It is pretty good, but we're going to be talking a lot about Meatloaf in the final 15 minutes or so of tonight's show. We're going to kind of pay tribute to him, and for no other reason, folks, you want to stick around for that. Because we're going to close the show tonight. We'll tell you about it later. I don't want to tell you about it now. But we're going to close tonight with a song, a special song, from Meatloaf.
Yes.
So, you know, we'll get to that in good time. But we've got lots of other things to talk about tonight. Let's start with Joe Biden's really, 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 really bad press conference.
That wasn't a press conference. That was a prefabricated, I know who to pick on, I'll read from my notes what I've been told to say.
But he couldn't even he couldn't even get that right. You know, no. I mean, he was stumbling through things. He was taking long pauses. You know, he's looking down at the notes, as you just described, for a good deal of the thing. And he had that kind of thousand-mile stare through most of it.
Yeah, well, the thing that really got me, do you remember, it was maybe three-quarters of the way through, he started all these weird hand gestures.
Yeah.
And he put his hand up real high. I know this sounds gross, and I don't mean it in that sense, but it almost looks like he was trying to adjust some tubing.
You wonder. I mean, you do have to wonder at that point, what exactly is he doing? And what's, you know, why is he doing what he's doing? But, you know, all of that aside, he just made one blunder after another. But I'll tell you something that was kind of funny in all of this. And we'll talk more about this in a little bit, too. But while he's up there giving this press conference, right, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are on the floor of the Senate saying they're not going to vote to kill the filibuster.
Exactly. And it was kind of ironic because at that point I was going back and forth. But, you know, I have to say kudos to Joe Manchin, especially. Kristen Sinema has always remained low-key. She doesn't really give away her stances.
Right.
But Joe Manchin had said right from the beginning, I'm not voting to kill the filibuster. We cannot have a one-sided Senate. We just can't do it. And kudos to him for standing strong. You know, other times he stood strong with Republicans in the beginning, and then at the last minute when changes were made, he kind of went along with the Democrats. But this time he stood strong when it was really critical.
Well, we're going to talk more about that filibuster thing coming up here in a few minutes. But also, while Biden was up there giving that god-awful thing, whatever it was, that press conference, use your air quotes, over in Great Britain, they were doing away with mask mandates and lockdown mandates and everything. And Biden's sitting there talking about, we got to mask up. We got to do these things. We got to, you know, have these vaccination mandates. And over in the UK, they're saying, no, we're doing away with it.
Well, you want to hear the irony with that? Earlier today, there was a flight from Miami International Airport on its way to London, where they have gotten rid of the mask mandates. Well, they had to turn the whole plane around because one woman would not put her mask on.
Well, that's so, kind of stupid.
One country doesn't know what the other country is doing. Nobody is coordinated on anything. And folks, you better get used to this. We're going to be seeing COVID at least through 2024.
Well, and you know, the weird thing about that was they were not quite, but they were nearly halfway to the UK when they turned around. So what did they actually prevent? I mean, if they'd have just gone ahead, the flight time would have been almost the same.
Exactly. But she didn't wear her mask, and they didn't want to let people off the plane, you know, who might have been exposed to her. Remember, folks, masks don't work.
Well,
that's the thing that everybody forgets, except for the N95 respirators. Those do work.
That's just
but
a minor detail.
Not everybody can afford those.
What? Yeah, that's just a minor detail that they don't work. That's just a minor detail. Now,
minor detail, right?
You know, you talk about that flight. There was a guy on a flight, I want to say it was about a week ago now. They let you take your mask off if you're eating, right? And this guy kept a French fry in his mouth the entire flight.
Good for him.
And never put his mask on. They couldn't do anything.
Good for him. And you know what's ironic about all this is, you know, the CDC has started to sort of make corrections on what they're saying.
Right.
This week, they said that natural immunity is better against Delta and the more serious forms of COVID than the jab is.
Gee, I wish we'd have thought of that.
Yeah, too bad we did, you know. Day one, we started saying, no, you don't need a vaccine because this is not a regular virus. This is a man-made, manipulated animal virus. You're not going to have success with a vaccine against that. And we were right.
We were right. I mean, it's kind of a common sense deal when you get right down to it. But the medical evidence has been out there for over a year.
I've been covering that extensively. I've done 27 articles on it, and except for the first one or two, they've been chock full with the medical information. And we're not talking medical information from Joe Blow's, you know, School of Medicine. We're talking the Mayo Clinic, the Sylvan Cancer Centers, the major centers of operation.
Johns Hopkins.
Johns Hopkins, right. And I've quoted certain leading epidemiologists from around the world. I mean, I've been putting out the real medical information. And what's very funny is I'm a 48-time Facebook felon. So I was just waiting for them to take everything down and throw me off. They didn't. Not for one.
No, they flagged a couple of things, you know, put that little warning thing up there, but, you know, who cares? Right. Nobody's, believe me, nobody, when they put that warning on there, nobody is clicking on that thing to go see what the official line of propaganda is.
Right. They go to the article that they're trying to hide.
Exactly.
But I mean, I haven't been kicked off one time. Because when you give your sources and you give your, you know, your credit where credit is due, who's saying the things, and it doesn't just become an opinion, but it's actual facts, they really can't do anything.
No, they can't.
They can slap the warning on. Right.
But that's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all they can really do. Now, here's the other big takeaway from that god-awful press conference, okay? While the House is busy trying to expose Biden's big lie. That's what they call it, right? Or not Biden's, but I mean Trump's big lie.
Trump, right.
Yeah. And you know, the liberals say that big lie is that the 2020 election was not legitimate. Biden's standing up there at the damn podium saying the election coming up in November of this year, unless we pass their voter rights goofiness, then this election will not be legitimate.
What he actually was admitting to was that he should not be in the White House.
Exactly.
That Trump actually won the election. But you notice Psaki and crew, they were fast to do damage control. Well, that's not really what he meant. Yeah, it is.
It is. It's exactly what he meant. They also had to come out immediately and try to pull back on what he said about Russia and Ukraine. He said, well, you know, if it's a small incursion, it's not a big deal. What?
Right. And personally, Craig, I don't know about you, but I think Putin is just flexing his muscle right now. I don't think he's going to invade.
I'm torn on it, to be honest with you. There's a good part of me that says he is going to do it because what's he got to fear? You know, he wants Ukraine back. What's he got to fear?
He wants Ukraine back, but the reason we can't go so gung-ho for Ukraine is Ukraine is not a NATO member. And that kind of screwed up the mix. But NATO already told Putin, if you do go in, it's going to be trouble for you. So Putin is not a stupid man. He's not Biden. No. He's in full, you know, full mental capacity. I think he's showing his strength, but I don't think he'll really go in. You might have a little skirmish here or there in the Crimea area, but I don't think he's going to go in. I mean, I hope I'm right.
I hope so, too.
I could be wrong, but it's just a feeling that I have that he's not going to do a major offensive there.
Well, let me float this out there. Excuse me, and see what you think of this. Could what Putin's doing over there on the border of Ukraine be a diversionary, distractionary situation so that when China's ready to go on Taiwan, they can just do it?
If China goes on Taiwan, I think there is a chance of serious issues here. Because Taiwan has been trying to get its independence from China. And you know how well that's not working out.
Yeah, right.
And Taiwan is a staunch ally of the United States. I think, not this administration, but I think if China ever did go against Taiwan, I think when Republicans take back the presidency in 2024, and you notice I'm saying that because I really believe that.
Right.
I think China will be very sorry if they try to do anything against Taiwan.
That could very well be. And we'll know more right after the Olympics are over. Because they're not going to pull something with the Olympics going on. But, you know, when the Olympics are over, then we'll see what happens. But every time Biden talked about, I don't care what it was, foreign policy, domestic policy, the economy, COVID, he was wrong all the way through that two-hour mess.
Absolutely. He lied. He basically lied about everything.
Well, but does he even know it? I mean, he's just saying what he's basically what he's told to say. I mean, does he even know he's lying?
Correctly. He stumbled over reading it when he was looking down at his notebook.
I know. It was terrible. It was horrible.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing else you can say about it.
So, this was not a good week for the liberals. They attempted to nuke the filibuster, and their attempt to nuke it got nuked.
Yes. That was great, and thank you again to Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. They did the right thing. They put what's best for the country ahead of their partisan politics. And I won't give it away, but I'm going to propose something in Tuesday's article that might, raise a little flags amongst some people in a good sense.
Okay. I found that whole charade to be pretty interesting. First of all, Chuck Schumer knew he did not have the votes. So why in the hell did he bring it to the floor for a vote?
He did it to show that I can't let this happen. If it fails, it's going to not be on my record. It's going to go against Manchin and Sinema because he knew what they were going to do. It takes the pressure off him, he believes, and puts it on them. They are now pariahs within the Democrat Party.
But he's wrong. Schumer's wrong about that. This did happen on his watch. He brought it to the floor on his watch. He brought it to the floor. It would not have lost on the floor had he not brought it.
Right, but the fact is, it did go for a vote. Okay, so he's going to come back and say, look, I tried, I put it on the floor, hoping that Manchin and Sinema would understand the party has to stick together and, you know, all that nonsense. Well, I think he really thought that at least one of them was going to cave.
You know, you open that door and there's no shutting it. And that's the problem. That's what Manchin and Sinema saw. Mm-hmm. I remember, many years ago when the Republicans were talking about pulling that stunt. I said, you know what? You don't want to do that because you do that, and then the Democrats are going to do it too.
Right.
You know, because we're not always going to be in power. There'll be a time, now's the time, that the liberals are in power. And if we do away with that, they're going to take advantage of it when they're in power. So you exactly. don't want to do that. Plus, you look at the way our founders and framers set up the Senate. They set it up to be the slowest thing on earth. Well, I mean,
well, they wanted
did.
To make sure they got it right.
They wanted people to really think about what they were doing.
Right.
You know, they wanted, you know, spirited debate. They wanted partisan debate. They wanted all kinds of debate. But they wanted the Senate to be the slow side of the U.S. government, where things were carefully thought out. And, you know, they never wanted the Senate to be a rubber stamp.
No, and basically, you know, while the House controls the purse strings, the Senate is really the one that makes the critical key decisions.
Right. A lot on domestic, but also mostly on foreign policy.
On foreign treaties and right. going to war and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
And that's why the founders and framers wanted the Senate to be so well considered. They wanted every decision the Senate made to be thought out, reasoned out, and really chewed over before they ever came to a decision. And this is exactly what nuking the filibuster would do away with.
Exactly. It would have been a simple majority vote. Whichever party has more senators, no matter how bad what was being proposed was, it would pass because, you know, for the good of the party. And it never needed to be brought up because we need the filibuster.
Every party that's in the minority needs to have the filibuster. It's what slows things down and makes right. things take the time they need to take in the Senate. You know, I mean,
exactly.
and as much as I hate to say it, because they use it all the time too, the filibuster, the Democrats, the liberals, when they're in the minority, that's the check and balance to mob rule.
Exactly. Well, you know what the filibuster actually does? It prevents a power grab because
right.
of razor-thin majorities. And if you have one side that's totally in power, this is not, remember, we're not a democracy, folks. We're a republic. A republic is a representative form of government. Razor-thin majority is not what, you know, is really kosher, use your air quotes, for running a republic.
Right. Right.
The filibuster is needed because it gives them time to think, oh, maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe this isn't the right thing to do. But if you ram something in with a simple majority vote, then you do have mob rule.
Well, and what you wind up with is whoever's in charge, whoever has the majority in the Senate, is all they're going to do really is their own partisan thing. They cease to care what's best for the country and the people of the country, and they only care about what's best for their party.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Keeping the party in power. That's always what's best for the party.
Well, you know what it also did? It ended the radicalization.
Oh, yeah.
Of everything that was, happening. And that is also critical not to allow mob rule.
Well, but here's what scares me. They wanted to do away with the filibuster so they could pass that voter rights thing, right?
You mean the stealing, how to steal right. an election 101.
That's mm-hmm. it. Yep, that's what they wanted, okay?
Right.
Now, if they get that, then they can virtually control the Senate, probably the House, probably the presidency, forever.
Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, and is that good for the American people? Is that good for the American system? No, absolutely not. You know, and basically they would eliminate the need for an election. Now, you see that kind of thing in a banana republic, but you don't see that kind of thing in a constitutional republic.
Right. And you see, but there's the problem. The Democrats keep thinking that the United States of America is a democracy. They have not accepted the fact that we are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic with a representative form of government.
Right.
Okay. We're not a democracy. We're not mob rule. And the Democrats have not accepted that as fact.
And see,
why?
Because
they hate the Constitution.
See, I tend to differ with you. Okay. I don't think it's that they've never accepted the fact. They know that fact damn well, but that's not what they want. See, they want a democracy. And I think they keep calling it that to get people used to the idea that we're going to be mob rule democracy. They know we're a constitutional republic. It's not that they've never come to grips with it. They have. They don't like it, and they want to change it.
Well, you have to understand something, too. There are some on our side that keep calling us a democracy as well.
Yeah, I know.
And they need to stop that nonsense, too, because no matter which way you twist it, the United States of America is not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic, period.
That's it. Well, but this is what you get when you quit teaching civics in schools.
Right.
You know, nobody knows. Nobody knows the difference.
You know something, Craig? Even before this whole woke and all this nonsense of changing American history, it still wasn't taught right, because kids would still come out of high school thinking we were a democracy.
Well, but when you look at how long the liberals have been in charge of the education system in this country, that comes as no surprise.
Right. Well, some of us know it.
Well, yes, we do, because we actually read, you know, our history. We read the Constitution, and we think for ourselves.
Exactly. And some of us actually had teachers that were on the right. Not all teachers were on the left.
Not back then.
No, you know. Not when, you know, we were in high school. I think this really got out of hand maybe in the mid-80s.
Yeah, I want to say it really started to head deep south, if you will, in probably the very, very late 70s, early 80s, and by the mid-80s, I think you're right. I think it was off the cliff and into the abyss.
Yeah, we you know, lucky we just missed it. But the fact is, history needs to be taught in school again, American history and civics. And the prime thing on day one, the kids should learn, the United States of America is a constitutional republic. We are not a democracy. That needs to be kind of struck from our vernacular.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Well, luckily, the nuking of the filibuster got nuked itself.
Yes.
And so we're safe for now, you know, from that. It's really going to be interesting over the next few weeks to see how liberals like Schumer and Pelosi and Liz Cheney. Yes, I called her a liberal.
Of course she is.
It's going to be interesting to see how they spin this for the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It will be.
It's going to be fascinating. Well, folks, look, we've made it to the end of the first segment of the show, which means we got to take a bottom of the hour break. Now, when we come back, we've got some really bizarre news about Dr. Anthony Fauci, and then we're going to wrap up tonight's show talking about meatloaf, and at the very end of the show, to take us out of the show, a very special song from Meatloaf.
Right.
So stay tuned. Yeah.
Yes.
And he nails it. I'll just put it that
Absolutely.
Way. He nails it. Stay with us, folks. We got more coming on Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. If you miss any part of tonight's show, tomorrow morning, go to rspradio1.com. Click the podcast button. The show will be right there waiting for you.
Right. Absolutely.
I took a drink of water during the break and a little bit of it went down the wrong side.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
Ugh. That's annoying, isn't it?
Yes, makes you feel like you're choking.
I know it. Hey, speaking of annoying, Dr. Anthony Fauci, or as I like to call him, Dr. Tony Baloney, is in the news, but for the weirdest reason.
Absolutely. It seems this man is extremely impressed with himself. Narcissism to the nth degree. And, you know, this comes on top of the fact that he's been giving absolutely nothing but idiotic advice about COVID. He switches back and forth. You know, every day it's a different thing. One jab, two jabs, three boosters, four boosters. Remember, this is the same man that in the 1980s said that AIDS could be spread through casual contact. So, you know right. Where this man is coming from. The whole thing is, this man is in love with himself. He is the epitome of narcissism. And Craig, why don't you tell them why?
Well, you know, here's the deal. I look around my little home office here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a photograph of a waterfall that I took years ago in Colorado. I've got photographs that I took when I lived at the Grand Canyon. I've got a frame deal of the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds. Now there is a photo up here of me when I flew with the Thunderbirds in 2001. Okay. But in Dr. Fauci's home office, oh my God.
Right.
He's got a giant oil painting on canvas of himself.
Yes.
Okay. He's got other pictures of himself in various places in the office. And Diane, he has his own Fauci bobblehead in there.
Yep.
What the hell?
This man is, it's not just a portrait of himself, Craig. It's a life-size portrait of himself.
I think it's bigger than life-size, to be honest with you. I think it's probably, well, maybe it is life-size because he does have a pretty big head on him.
Yeah, no, it is life-size according to the reports. This first came to light, folks, back in September when a documentary was done about him through the Disney Channel, of all things, and the New York Post reported on it, but it kind of gotten buried away. Until now, people have started, you know, delving into him and also into his personal life, because he sure as hell is in all of our personal lives. And these photos now are showing up. This man thinks of himself as a god.
I mean, first of all, who has a life-size oil painting made of themselves? And second of all, who puts it in their own home office where they can look at it every day?
Right. Him. It's as simple as that. Him. He has got an ego on him. He really thinks he's like the COVID god. But he's proving to be the COVID idiot, the COVID fool. Because, you know, like I said before, one day, oh, all you need is a jab. Then it's two jabs. Then it's a booster. Well, you need to boost the booster. Now it's you might forever need to keep having boosters every year and this and that. He still has not accepted the fact. Well, he knows as fact, but he will not say it publicly. These jabs don't work. The jab people now are getting sicker than we, the unvaccinated, or we that have had COVID and now have some immunities to it. This man is, he should be locked up. I'd lock him up in Gitmo for all of this, because he knew damn well that what was needed all along, he was an antidote. He knew it.
He definitely needs a checkup from the neck up. You know, I'll say that.
Jumpsuit. He needs an orange jumpsuit and a nice long stay in Gitmo, because how many people have died because of this man?
Well, let me just say this about that big painting of himself, of his gloriousness. That is the weirdest painting I have seen since the Bill Clinton in a blue dress painting that was in Jeffrey Epstein's place in New York.
Remember that. Yeah.
I mean,
remember that. Yes. And by the way, folks, you can still see this documentary about him and his office. It's on Disney Plus.
Okay, there's a reason not to get Disney Plus. I mean, you say that, you can still see it, folks. Like, people are going to rush to see it now. And well, don't we see enough of this idiot the way it is?
It becomes a freak show, and maybe then people will understand. The ones that are still thinking of him as a god, maybe then when they see this, maybe a light bulb will go off in their head and saying, what have we been doing? Who have we been listening to?
I think you're far too optimistic.
Oh, he's going to fall.
Oh, I guarantee
you. He's going to fall.
I guarantee you. Well, they're looking into his private finances now, and that ain't a pretty picture either.
No, he's invested in some of these big pharma companies that are producing the vaccines and the boosters and everything else, just like many in our government are, including over 280, I believe it's 283 in Congress, that are invested in these pharmaceutical companies, the three that are producing all of this. Come on, folks, wake up. Those of you who are still listening to this nonsense. That's why Florida is so successful during all of this, because DeSantis said, screw it, basically. Live your lives.
Well, and DeSantis was 100% correct. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, 100%. Speaking of Ron DeSantis, I see that, you know, there's the media has been trying to play up, mainstream media has been trying to play up this weird thing that there's a big feud between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. And Trump came out today and said, I don't know what they're talking about.
Right. And so did Governor DeSantis. He called it the same thing Trump called it, fake news. They've been friends for a long time. They're still friends. There is no animosity between the two. There is no feud between the two. This was strictly made up by the media.
Well, can I throw something in on this that I haven't seen anybody throw in yet today?
Sure.
And this goes to something that you and I were talking about earlier this week. And I think we may have even brought it up on Right Side Patriots.
Okay.
But, you know, Tuesday was a long time ago. I don't remember. But here's the thing. One of the things Trump said, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have the quote in front of me, but he said, I don't know what they're talking about. This is fake news. Governor DeSantis and I are going to have a close working relationship for years to come. Does that mean that Ron DeSantis might be the VP pick?
I'm thinking it's a possibility. To me, there's two possibilities. Either DeSantis is going to be his VP pick, or if Trump does run, he will appoint DeSantis to some very important cabinet position, or he's going to turn over the reins to DeSantis and become an advisor or something in a DeSantis administration.
I think it's a foreshadowing of something.
Right.
You know, I don't think exactly. Trump would use that. Yeah, I don't think Trump would use that particular phrasing if there wasn't something cooking.
Exactly.
Yep.
But for 2020, as far as DeSantis, as everybody knows, his wife was battling breast cancer. Well, it was either yesterday or the day before, DeSantis announced that Casey has finished her treatments, and right now everything looks really good.
Good.
Yep. So right now it looks like she's beat it. And the only thing that I have always felt about DeSantis either not taking a VP nod or even running is if his wife was still sick. So right now, it looks like she's in, you know, doing real well, and there's some dynamics going on here for sure.
Yeah, and I can hear liberal heads exploding everywhere.
Yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, the idea that Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis are going to have a close working relationship for years to come, that's enough to strike terror into the hearts of liberal Marxists.
Exactly. And all the other free states or wannabe free states, they're going to jump on that bandwagon.
Oh, you bet. Oh, and fast.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you look at the way Florida's conducted itself throughout the pandemic and, you know, the position they're in now. You know, I mean, look, everybody's getting the Omicron. That's that, you know, the liberals want you to think that it's worse in Florida than it is anywhere else. It's not.
No.
You know, I mean, it just is what it is. Christy Nome, South Dakota, they're doing great. Their tourism is now back above pre-pandemic levels. They became the first state to have their tourism numbers come back to pre-pandemic levels, and they're riding the wave, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Christy Nome, if Trump decided not to run and turn, you know, the reins over to DeSantis, I would love to see a DeSantis Nome ticket.
It'd be a hottest ticket in town.
Absolutely.
I mean, it just would. All right, so we got about, 15 minutes or so left, and remember, we're going to play at the end of the show to take us out. So we're going to, Diane and I are going to get out of the way about 2.5 minutes early and then just let that song play by Meatloaf. So let's talk about Meatloaf and let's pay tribute really. I mean, this is Friday. We're you know, a little bit looser on Friday than we are on Tuesday night shows. So let's pay a little bit of a tribute to a guy that created a sound in rock music that nobody had done previous to him.
No. And it was called rock opera, basically. And while he might have not been fond of that term, it came about because of his voice. His songs actually told a story, and in the way his voice presented that story, it wasn't the typical music genre of the time.
Right, even though it was rock, you know, and at the time, you got to figure, Bat Out of Hell, the original album, came out in 1977-78, and rock music in those days was just people making a lot of noise, right? And it was cookie cutter, okay? One rock band pretty much sounded like every other rock band. Now, yeah, you had some standouts. You had the Rolling Stones. You know, you had a few groups that stood out. But here comes a guy that does music that sounds like a stage production, and instead of having a rock band, he's got more of an orchestra. Right. And yet the vocals are pure rock, but they're pure.
Because he could actually really sing. He didn't scream into a microphone, folks. He sang into a microphone. And there's a big difference.
Yeah, it was remarkable. Now, it took a little while to catch on. People weren't really sure, what is this? You know, and the songs on the albums, the singles were long. Some of them are 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes. You know, and people are like, what is this? But boy, when it caught on, it caught fire.
Yes. In fact, the original Bat Out of Hell, the first one, they were three altogether, folks. It was a trilogy. It is still one of the top selling, I'll use the word album just as a catch-all, but the top selling album of all time. It's right there, I believe, in the top three.
Yeah.
This day, which is amazing.
People are still buying it.
Yes.
You know, and it's because it's different from anything else they'd ever heard. You know, and along about that same time, Queen was hitting, and that was different, you know, and but, you know, good Lord, Meatloaf set a standard for rock music. And he was a rebel. He wasn't like anybody else. He had a weird name, you know, and at first people weren't sure. Is Meatloaf a person or is it a group?
Story. There's a story how he got that moniker.
Yeah.
When he was born, he was a very big baby. His father, at his birth, actually said, oh, he's so big and chunky, he's like a piece of meat. He's actually always had that nickname since he was a little boy. And his background wasn't exactly the greatest. His mother died when he was barely 18. She had cancer. And his father was a drunk, a severe alcoholic. In fact, right after his mother had died, his father actually tried to kill him.
Yeah. And nice dad.
Real nice dad. So he didn't have the greatest start in life. However, his politics from Texas, he was a conservative.
Right.
Always a conservative. And in fact, in a 2010 interview that was published last August, he said that face masks were a nuisance.
Yeah.
And he said, we have to stop this because of politics, because it's just about politics. He has been on Fox numerous times trying to get out the message that not all the people in the music business are liberal. They might have the biggest mouths and the media, you know, picks up on them
right
more than the conservatives. but there are more and more like him in, you know, in the industry. And also the sad part about him was his partnership with Jim Steinman. That was the writer who wrote most of the songs that he did and made sure everything was done right. The whole, I guess you'd call it producer, arranger. Right. I'm not sure.
Right.
But he died a year ago of, I believe it was either a stroke or kidney failure. And Meatloaf had a strange foreboding that he would go within a year after him, and he did.
He did. You know, here's the sick part of all this. The liberals today did not even let the Meatloaf get cold before they started cheering his death.
Because he was a conservative.
Well, yeah, and you know, they called him vile names today, and you know, because of his stand on masking and lockdowns and the jab and all that. You know, it wasn't that long ago, few months back, maybe a year ago, Meatloaf was asked if he was scared of COVID, and he said, "Oh yeah, I'm scared to death. Are you kidding me?" He said, "But I understood stopping life for a little while, but they can't continue to stop life because of politics. And right now, they're stopping because of politics." Right. I mean, here was a guy. He said, "Look, if I get it and I die, I die." Okay, but he wanted to live his life.
Right. And another thing about that, yes, on his death, he did have COVID. No one's denying that. But the thing is, he died with COVID, not technically because of COVID. He had a congenital heart disease. I think, Craig, you know the long name of it.
Yeah, and I don't have that in front of me right now, but it was a rare heart disease that caused his heartbeats to speed up uncontrollably. He was also a very severe asthmatic.
Yes. Yes. So while COVID might have contributed to his death, mostly it was the heart condition and the asthma. COVID was just like an added ingredient. But they're trying, the left is trying to say, see, another one of yours died of COVID.
Yeah, and they're very happy about it.
Now, I don't know if he was vaccinated or not. I really don't know that at this point.
I don't know either. You know, that's not been released, and you know, but no. So what? I mean, the guy did what he thought was best for him. He lived his life. He wanted to be on stage. He wanted to continue recording. He wanted to continue singing. You know, and he just looked at this and went, I can't do this. You know, this is being locked away, covered in a mask, having experimental stuff shot into your arms. You know, not his idea of living.
No, and he's right. And basically, that's the way it is here in Florida and a few other states. We're living our lives. Because one thing people don't understand about Omicron, for most people, is presenting as a bad cold. Everybody gets a cold one time or another.
Right.
That's all this is.
You know, Meatloaf was such an interesting guy. The persona you saw on stage was not the man.
Right.
You know, he created characters. Yeah. He considered himself an actor before he ever considered himself a musician. And he considered what he did on stage with the music to be acting, and each song, when he sang it, he was a different character when he sang each song. So it's a very interesting thing. But, you know, on stage, he was a wild man. At home, he was quiet. He was shy. He was very reserved. He was just kind of an average Joe. At home. Yeah.
Yes. You know, daughters. He will be remembered as an icon, and there's a movement now that he needs to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Look, it took them decades for Freddie Mercury and Queen to be inducted. But I think, you know, they're going to push this a little bit faster, hopefully.
It's hard to believe he's not there already.
I know.
You know, I mean, it's hard to believe that when you consider the impact that his music had. And for Meatloaf, it was not about quantity, it was about quality.
Yeah, his videos, I mean, with the gothic edge to a lot of them, I mean, I could keep watching those things. I discovered Meatloaf later. And around the same time that I discovered Queen. And those two just stayed in my mind, because this isn't what the usual music was that you kept hearing on, you know, on the radio with everybody screaming and just nonsense. Real rhyme or reason to the songs. And then you saw something like this. I think the only thing that even came slightly close was when The Who tried to do the rock opera Tommy.
Yeah, and that was a whole different thing. You know, that was a whole different thing. Couple of quick things about Meatloaf that you know, one's personal to me, the other one is just him, okay? Mm-hmm. First time I ever heard Paradise by the Dashboard Light, I'll never forget it. I was playing football on a Sunday afternoon, and we were taking a break. I was in high school, and a friend had parked his car right next to the football field. And so we were sitting around his car, and we were all having some water to drink. And he turned on his car radio, and that song was on. I'll never forget it. I'd never heard anything like that in my life. I was blown away.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Everybody, not everybody, but most people have a collection of something.
Right.
Okay. I collect clocks. Diane, you collect kitty cats. Right?
I collect a couple of things, yes.
You know. Do you know what Meatloaf collected? This is the big gothic guy, the rocker. What do you think Meatloaf collected?
At one time I knew, but I know he had a pretty extensive collection of crucifixes, but I don't think that's where you're going.
No, it's not. He had two things that he really loved. He had pop art, the kind of stuff you'd see in True Detective magazine or on some of those old vintage movie posters. He had an enormous collection of that. The other thing, this will catch people off guard, he collected rubber duckies.
Really?
Those old rubber duckies that people have in the bathtub. He collected rubber duckies.
I still have my kids' rubber duckies.
You know? We're going to miss Meatloaf. We're going to miss what he's going to do next, but thankfully we have what he's already done, and that will never go away.
Yes. He'll be remembered as a trailblazer of a different type of rock. And it will last. It will be his legacy.
Well, and it's a soundtrack for a lot of people's lives. You know, which is really cool. Now, we promised you at the beginning of the show, we told you again later in the show, that we're going to wrap things up tonight with a very special song from Meatloaf. Now, what you're going to hear here, we're going to sign off and then we're going to play this. This is Meatloaf at, I think it was the World Series in 1994, mm-hmm. and he sang the national anthem.
Yeah. People don't expect that.
No, it was remarkable. So we're just going to play it here. And with that, Diane, you and I are going to sign off.
Okay. See you guys Tuesday.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend. Here's Meatloaf and the National Anthem.
And now, to honor America, please join Grammy Award-winning MCA recording artist Meatloaf as he sings The Star-Spangled Banner. Thank you.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes